Can you learn to love your body again after breast cancer? How do you cope with the loss of libido when your partner wants sex? And what on earth do you do if you're single? This week, I'm going to be answering all your questions with TV, sex and intimacy coach, Charlene Douglas. This is So Now I've Got Breast Cancer, the podcast for anyone who's just been diagnosed. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan, the breast surgeon with breast cancer. And I found out the hard way just how little I knew when I suddenly found myself in the chemo chair. It's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. There's a lot of bad information out there, and I want to guide you down the right path. So if you've got a question, this show will answer it for you. I know what it's like to have your sex life turned upside down by breast cancer treatment. I'd only been married for a couple of years and neither my husband Dermot or I were prepared for what was about to happen. I wanted him to divorce me and find a woman with two healthy breasts and a libido to match. And I know I'm not alone. You've sent me so many questions about this that have made my heart break just reading them. And I'm thrilled that we've got Charlene Douglas with us today to answer them. Charlene, aka the Intimacy Coach UK, is a sex and relationship therapist known for her TV appearances on Married at First Sight and The Sex Clinic. She delivers workshops for Macmillan about cancer, sex, and intimacy, and she talks about the importance of getting to know ourselves again before we even speak to our partners. Welcome to the show, Charlene.
Oh, hi, Liz. Thanks so much for having me.
Many of my listeners are struggling to come to terms with their new bodies after breast cancer treatment, and because this is such a personal subject, I'm not using their names. So one lady asked, how do I cope with the embarrassment of looking, feeling, and reacting differently? Another said, how I feel now, only having one boob, is just too raw to talk about the intimacy side of my relationship with my husband. And another said, having no nipples anymore has been the hardest part of my cancer journey. How do we all come to terms with our changed bodies when it comes to sex?
Yeah, so there's a few questions in there, isn't there? And I think the first thing that comes to mind is there is a lot of pressure, I think, from society that when we're in relationships that we need to always be sexual. We always need to connect with our partners in a sexual way. And if we're not doing that, that there's something wrong. You know, our partner may not want us anymore. Our partner may be feeling really held back. Or we're not being, you know, we're not sort of showing up in the way that we need to in our relationship. And I think that pressure can mean that it really negatively impacts our own well-being. What we know about sex is that in order to have the best sex ever, you need to be in a place where you feel good about yourself, you feel good about the situation, your body needs to be relaxed. You know, your mind needs to be able to relax, you need to be able to let go. So the focus has to be getting yourself to a place where you feel a sense of a healthy well-being, a sense of tranquility and peace, so that you can relax and connect with your partner. And I think that's the thing, the key is to not kind of, and it's weird me saying this as a sex therapist to say, you know, like put sex aside for just for a moment. But what I'm saying is, you know, really focus on your own well-being, you know, learning about your body again, you know, what your body can and can't do. And then, you know, gently entering into the world of intimacy.
That's great advice. And I think it took me a long time just to be able to look at my mastectomy scar in the mirror. I won't let my husband see me naked, and I had to come to terms with what I look like and realize, oh, I can have fun by myself again. I think that's so important. The new body image after breast cancer surgery can have a massive impact on my listeners, especially those who are single. We've had 4 or 5 comments from them. So one listener said, I'm scared to start dating again, or maybe to consider being naked in front of someone new. Only my massage therapist has seen my mastectomy scar. Another lady wanted to know, how do you talk about your breasts when entering a new relationship? I've got an implant and no nipple. And when do you bring up expectations with a new partner? Another just said, I look different. I've got no nipple anymore and I'm massively bloated still from the surgery and chemo. And even my labia and clitoris have been pulled up in front of me. And I didn't realize this happened, but when we do breast reconstruction using your tummy fat and we pull it up to close the scar, it lifts your pubic mound up. So suddenly your clitoris is like 2 inches higher than it should be. It's like staring at you in the mirror. And then someone sent us this voice note.
I was diagnosed in October of 2023 with synchronous bilateral breast cancer and had a double lumpectomy in December. I am currently undergoing radiation and will begin taking tamoxifen a few weeks after my 15 rounds are complete. I hope to resume dating at some point, but I'm feeling self-conscious about both my diagnosis and the surgical scars it has left behind. Of course, tamoxifen will also affect things like mood and libido. I'm hoping you can help me navigate my fear of starting dating again, as well as how and when to share both my diagnosis and the fact I've got surgical scars with a new man in my life. Thank you.
So how should my listeners tackle this when they're starting a new relationship?
I think this is definitely a difficult one, because the world of dating could be quite a scary place for many people, you know, not to mention people that are going through cancer and surgery. I think it goes back to building on emotional intimacy. And I think that society teaches us that when we date, focus should be on physical intimacy and how attracted you are to your partner and how soon you get in the sack and enjoy all of the fun that goes with sex. But I would say that in any kind of setup, but particularly when you're going through this type of sort of cancer treatment and surgery, I would say the key is to build on the emotional intimacy, getting to know the person, and also kind of testing through your conversations with your new date the type of person that they are. You know, are they a person that could be trusted with information like this? And you can kind of quite easily test somebody in terms of how they view life, you know, how they talk about other people. You know, sometimes people have mentioned situations that have happened to their family or friends, and you can see how they talk about those situations to know whether they are someone who is an emotional safe space for you to carry your situation. It can be quite damaging to share something very personal, very vulnerable to somebody who doesn't have the capacity to emotionally hold that vulnerability. So I would say to get to know someone, to test the relationship, and then, you know, share your journey with them. But share as much as you're comfortable with. I think if there's this huge pressure that you have to share this big secret, it doesn't make the experience very pleasant at all. It's quite an unpleasant experience. So I would say the key is to get to know somebody and then to share the parts that you feel comfortable sharing. And what you can find, if it's the right person, they will hold that information in the right way and they will reassure you, and you'll do things at your own pace, and then hopefully it will go from there.
I guess just to pick up on that, say a lot of people no longer have a nipple when they've had a breast reconstruction. And they worry, do you tell them before, but then what if they don't want sex because they find out? Or do you just wait until you're in the sack and then they go, oh God, you don't have a nipple? Any advice on that kind of thing when it is so obvious?
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't wait until you're in the sack, to use your term there. I definitely wouldn't wait until that point. I think that's too much of an emotionally vulnerable space to be in to share that kind of information, because you don't know what their reaction will be. And unfortunately, we are in a society where some people aren't very kind, and that's just the way of the world, right? So I think it is important to have that conversation before you enter into the world of sex. But I'm saying that because the world of dating, particularly online dating, it could be so quick, right? So there's so many different people coming in and out of your world. You're going on dates, you're having conversations, you're doing maybe video calls or things like that. You wouldn't want to share that with everyone, I suppose is what I'm saying. Use your instinct in terms of, you know, what I share and what I don't share. And of course, if they don't respond to the way that's very kind, creating that boundary where you say, okay, I'm going to end it here. Like, don't do it to yourself to still stay in that kind of situation on that space.
Brilliant. So kind of building up your self-worth and realizing you deserve someone who can take on everything you've been through.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you think about it, sorry, just to add there, you know, the world of relationships, it's never going to be a situation where, you know, both of you are always going to be healthy for the rest of your lives. I mean, if you have that as a situation, that's great. But for most of us, we all have things going on. So, you know, even men, they will have issues around erection. They will have issues around, you know, sort of prostate cancer, and that can have an impact on their sexual functioning. So, you know, if you're in a heterosexual relationship in particular, like, the expectation is that you are also there for them, you know, when they go through things. And so you're looking for someone that will love you, will respect you, and will accept you.
Brilliant. I hope everyone listening can find that. Now, the big issue that most of my listeners are dealing with, along with me, is the complete loss of their sex drive.
Yeah.
And this affects almost everyone on hormone blocking treatment as it drastically lowers the level of estrogen we have. I literally just want a cup of tea. And we had four or five comments that just really resonated. One said, it's like someone has turned the volume down and it's made even harder when you're young. I'm in my early 30s. And the trauma of fertility preservation treatment and ongoing worries about whether I'll be able to have children are psychologically linked and they do affect our sex life. It's like a mild form of grief. Another asked, will her sex drive ever come back or is this normal when you're menopausal? One woman said, I've now got zero desire for sex. I've tried porn, slowing things down with my partner, and I feel nothing. Is there genuinely a way out of this? I'd go as far to say that the idea of intimacy makes me angry after my breast cancer diagnosis a year ago. And I'm with them. I don't get wet anymore. I literally never want to have sex again. Is there anything you can do when you reach that menopausal stage of your life and your libido just disappears?
Yeah, you know, I work with a lot of women that are going through the menopause right now. I think one thing we know about the menopause is that there isn't much, or there hasn't been much information about it. So, you know, it feels like something that just happens to you and you're expected to just work through the symptoms. Sometimes you're told that you're not really experiencing that, or it might be something else. It could be a really isolating and lonely space to be in. I think we're getting much better at it now, though. There are lots of charities, there are Facebook groups, and more people are talking about it. And we know in the UK that Davina McCall has done a lot of work around the menopause, which has been fantastic and brought a lot of awareness to it. But there is a lot more work to do so that people are prepared for it. In terms of having a low libido, I suppose when it comes to the menopause, because your estrogen level is lowered, or you know, there's not estrogen in your body, it does have a huge impact on, you know, the way that your body functions. And as difficult as this can be, and I say this with a lot of love and respect, that there has to be a level of self acceptance around what your body is doing during this stage. But it doesn't mean that sex has to completely go out the window or anything related to sex and intimacy. It's just about finding a different way to be intimate, you know, a different version of this. I think it's about kind of taking it right back to what works for me here. So, you know, some people enjoy massage and they said just that kind of connection with their partner can feel really nice. There are things like audio erotica that people find quite thrilling because, you know, you're not being touched, but you're listening to like sexy scenarios, and that can kind of create a bit more of a sexual buzz within you. It might be that none of those things work and you might need to take a break from the world of sex for a moment and enjoy other ways of being intimate with your partner, sort of emotionally intimate with your partner. One thing I just want to add here, so a little plug for my book, but I've got a book coming out, and one of the chapters I speak about what I call the traffic light system. And this is kind of the sort of red, amber, green of sexual desire, right? And sexual motivation. So the idea is that most of us in our day-to-day life, we're in that red stage, right? So that kind of non-sexual space where we're, I don't know, we're going to the grocery shops or whatever it may be. We're doing just our normal everyday activities. So usually in that space, we're not feeling sexual, right? But the amber stage is what I call the warm-up. And this is, what does it take to get you to the green? The green being that kind of real sexual space. And that warm-up space, when you're going through the menopause, might be different from what it was, you know, before you were going for the menopause. And the work that you have to do is to work out what that stage of what's the amber, what's the warm-up part that now looks different. That's the work that you have to do. But just, I know I said a lot here, but the bit that I want to add to that is communication. Sometimes people say, I don't understand therapy. Like, all you're doing is talking to people. Like, how does that help? There is something powerful about speaking and getting it out how you feel. You're getting the feedback from others, getting reassurance from others. It does something different physically. And this has been proven, it can help to bring your libido back. Talking about how you're feeling and getting reassurance from your partner and working on it together.
That's really helpful. But I think for a lot of the women listening, we don't have a natural menopause. We have no estrogen for the next 10, 15, 20 years of your life. It doesn't suddenly come back. It's a permanent thing because people like me were giving women drugs to stop their estrogen. So your sex drive just disappears completely. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very hard when you're in a relationship and your partners want to have sex and you just don't, and you feel that drive. Are there any things we can do to actually get in the mood again? Because for many of us, the amber space is never going to happen. We literally have no sex drive for 5 or 10 years. Are there tricks or things we can do to think, or do we just have to say, it's just my turn to put it in the diary because that's part of the relationship?
This is a difficult question to answer. And the reason why I say that is because I think it depends on the situation. So there are women that I have worked with where, like you said, this is their permanent situation. So I suppose if your body doesn't allow you to sort of create those sort of sexual hormones, that sort of dopamine rush and the serotonin, all those kind of sexual hormones, if it's not allowing you to kind of create those hormones, then there's nothing that you can do to create it other than work on build intimacy in different ways. That's really it. So it is about kind of, you know, sometimes some people find that if they sort of use maybe like sex toys, or if they used to be audio erotical or ethical porn or things like that, that in the first instance, as they're watching these things or they use a sex toy, they're not really feeling much sexually. But the more they use it, they find that actually I'm feeling a little bit here. And so it is like trial and error. For example, there are sex toys that, so I know that for a lot of people that have a clitoris, sometimes the clitoris isn't very sensitive anymore as a result of menopause. So what you find is that you might need a sex toy that has a higher vibration. So we know like the ones, you know, they normally have like a real buzz that will...
And the air pulse vibrators. It's like everything, you need a different stimulus. But I think I found if you masturbate, you realize you can still climax and it can still be enjoyable. You just don't want to start masturbating. So it's almost getting to know yourself and think, okay, I can do this myself and this is okay. And maybe it might be nice to share it with someone, but it's that kind of... you can still do it, but you might not want to.
Yeah, and also as well, again, you know, society teaches us that we have to have this desire first and then like arousal takes place. But sometimes it's a case of kind of doing it and then for the desire to come after that. I'd also say as well, it is really important to make sure that your external and your internal environment is in alignment with how you need it to be. And what I mean by that, and these may seem like little basic things, but you know, if your external environment is one where you're trying to have sex in a room where the room's messy, you've got your children's clothes in the corner that needs to be done, you know, piled up. You've got, you know, a neighbor next door that, you know, the walls are very thin. You know, all of these things impact your ability to connect with yourself and to experience intimacy. I think people sometimes take that for granted. You know, if you've got a roommate, if you've got, you know, no knock on your door and any child can sort of walk in, all these things distract you. And I think sometimes as women, we try to do both, right? So we're like, yeah, we want to be intimate right now. I'm going to get my sex toy and I'm going to sort of be intimate with myself. But the child's watching TV downstairs and they can hear the child coming up the stairs. And it's like, your body doesn't work like that. You have to find a space where it feels private. And this is why sometimes people will say that when they go into, like, say, a hotel, maybe by themselves, they find that they can really relax because no one knows them, no one's going to walk in, and it's their own private space. But create the environment that you want. So, for example, for some people, a nice, like, I don't know, Spotify playlist of music that kind of helps them to feel calm works really well. For some people, on, like, YouTube, you can type in, like, sexy instrumental music. That works a treat, so I've heard.
I'm taking that.
That works a treat. Things like a diffuser with like lavender in it that kind of makes the room smell really nice. You know, like look at ways to kind of stimulate your senses to encourage that desire to come back as well.
Great tips. I'm going to be taking a lot of those back with me. The one of the joys of breast cancer treatment and the menopause is when you do have penetrative sex, it can be incredibly painful. Because as we know, no estrogen means no vaginal lubrication, a dry vagina, and even atrophy when the walls can get very thin and can tear. We had a couple of comments from listeners just sharing their experiences. One is on letrozole. That's a drug that stops you producing estrogen. And she said, even with lots of lube, sex can be uncomfortable and it's giving her a lot of psychological hurdles. Lots of people are finding it painful to have sex. One said, I've given up hope. The vaginal dryness just gets worse and worse even when I want it. And another said, I've got lube, but are there any preferred positions or exercises or toys that can help? Have you got any advice for those of us suffering with a dry, painful vagina?
Yes. And again, this is something that I hear about quite a lot. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of clients who I suppose, feel at their wit's end. You know, some who very sadly try to just sort of brace themselves for it, just for the sake of their partner experiencing pleasure, but they are in the most pain, and you know that, yeah, it can be really an awful experience. I suppose there's two things here. You know, if your body isn't naturally lubricating, then you need to use lubricant, and there's no shame in using a lot of lubricant and topping up. And I think that, again, society sort of teaches us that, oh my gosh, this is a bit embarrassing. You know, like, you're being intimate. Like, you know, do you want to say to your partner, sorry, one moment, just want to go in the drawer again, you know? But I think it's all about mindset, isn't it? And how you use lubricant. You can have so much fun with lubricant. You know, you can warm lubricant up, you can make it cold. Like, you can, it can be so much fun. You can put it on sex toys. Your partner can do a little S shape on your body and then, like, sort of dribble it around your vulva. There's so many, like, fun ways that you can do it and have fun with it. But I think there is a stigma around it, around, like, oh my gosh, your body isn't doing this naturally. But even women who naturally lubricate still use a lot of lubricant because it heightens the sensitivity. So it makes sex so much more fun anyway. If the lubricant still is quite unpleasant, then I would say it's about looking at other parts of your body that also kind of create pleasure. And again, and I know I feel like I'm always blaming society here, like, you know, media, education, and the religion, culture, everything, but I feel like there's such a strong, like, sexual script that we all seem to follow that just leaves so many people distressed. And the work that I do with clients is, let's bring it back to what works for you in this moment, because ultimately the idea is pleasure. That's what we're looking for, pleasure. That's what we're seeking. So if something isn't pleasurable, you know, there's so many other erogenous zones on our bodies that create pleasure, so many. And, you know, there are things like, you know, I was talking to someone the other day about energy orgasms, and they were like, oh my gosh, what's that? And I'm like, this is where you connect with your partner on such a deep level. You breathe together. You can maybe hold one another. And if you get it right, you could orgasm at the same time, but you need to work out what your body needs in that moment, right? It might be music. So I spoke a little bit earlier about YouTube and the whole, like, sexy instrumental, right? Because there are some that kind of go, like, up with the intensity. So you're listening to it and it's, like, more and more intense. There's, I suppose, what I'm saying, there are different ways of being intimate, and it doesn't always have to include penetration. In saying that, we also know, and I'd probably say men in particular, you know, they miss that. You know, they sometimes really want that. And I understand that. I'd also say part of relationships is that sometimes you do have to do things a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Because our bodies don't always work the way that we want them to.
Great advice there. But let's say when you do want to have penetrative sex because you know your partner does want it and you miss that connection. I've heard you talk about sex cushions and toys, and you're a fan of O-Nuts as well. So can you explain how they can help stop sex or potentially deep penetrative sex being quite so painful?
Yes. So O-Nut, they are kind of like sort of rubber rings. In the pack, you can get like about 10 of them. So you choose how many you need. So sometimes people use it. So if your partner, for example, has quite a long penis, it can be the case that when you're having penetrative sex that it feels too deep. You know, particularly if it feels like it's kind of hitting your cervix, that might feel quite painful. So what women can do in particular, they can just put these rings on, and it basically means that the penetration isn't so deep. And that can work really well. The sex cushions are good, but usually sex cushions work well for deeper penetration. So that may not work for everyone. But I suppose what I would say, the world of sex isn't the way that society, again, teaches us. Right, I'm going to blame society. It is about trying different things. So the sex cushions can really work. You might find that it allows your body to be positioned in a way that takes the focus off other parts of your body. So for example, some of the sex cushions are kind of elevated slightly. So it means your breast areas are lower down. So your partner is seeing your bottom half a lot more and can kind of enjoy that space. And then obviously you can too. And that's great, particularly if they're kind of like massaging you with like lubricant and stuff like that. And you know, they don't always have to go in with their fingers to penetrate. They can just sort of massage and just enjoy that area. Also, just want to add here that we know that for a lot of women, audio feedback from their partner can be really sexually thrilling as well. So sometimes you'll have partners that will just be dead quiet when they're like making love to you. You want to be like, babe, like talk. It's okay. Say what you're enjoying here. Say how much you want me, you know. So that's also something that could be quite a turn on and can create like great sexual energy in your body. So I suppose what I'm saying here is that the sex cushions and own-ups and all these like additional aids, try the different things out. See what works and what doesn't. You know, I always say to my clients, have like a little sexual bag, and in your bag, choose what you're going to have in it. The bits that you know do it for you, and the bits that you don't want, just spread them out.
I guess it comes back to communication again. And one listener asked, how do you have that low libido, dry vagina conversation with a partner without them taking it as, you don't find me attractive anymore, I don't turn you on anymore?
Sometimes I find with partners, they sometimes listen to, like, you know, if you direct them to a website where they can sort of listen to the, or to like read the information or listen to the information, sometimes that lands better than us having the initial conversation with our partner. We can follow it up with more conversation, but that can work well in the first instance. So for example, there are websites like OMG Yes, that's about female sexual pleasure and desire. That is a fantastic website for anyone who is a woman or loves being with women, or anyone has a vulva. Like, that is a great space to learn about the body, what it does, about lubrication, about penetration, etc. So that's a really great place to start. I know I've plugged my book a couple of times, but when my book comes out in the next few months, there's a chapter in there that that helps men to understand kind of what a woman's body needs, and, you know, the fact that there's no shame in lubrication. There's no shame in not being able to have penetrative sex sometimes, you know, like there's other ways of being intimate. So I would say to have those conversations, it's important to have those conversations, of course, but if your partner is someone that maybe doesn't listen, because sometimes we have partners that don't really listen, you can direct them to sites like OMG Yes. And there's another one called climax.how, which is also a great one as well. And then after that, then sort of sit down and talk about your sex lives.
Brilliant. And I'm also going to plug my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. A lot of women have said just their men reading and understanding why they have no libido can suddenly get them inside their head and accept it rather than feeling bad. But as breast cancer is the thing that keeps on giving, there are lots of other side effects of treatment. Nerve pain, lots of urine infections, the hot flushes and night sweats, spooning is gone forever. Any other tips to try and get non-sexual intimacy back when you're a menopausal mess?
You know, I know that I've kind of touched upon the importance of communication, and communication is an interesting one. I sort of relate it to, you know, when you have a medical symptom and you go to your doctor and you tell them your medical symptom, and then they say, yeah, it sounds like you're going through stress, and you're just like, no, not that you want them to say, like, not that you want them to say it's a medical issue, but you just think, oh gosh, this sounds like such a cop-out, you're just saying it's stress, and then they send you on your way. I find that when I work for clients, they tell me their whole story about what's going on within the world of sex, and I say, I feel like there's an issue here around communication with you and your partner, and I can see their face expression. They look like, oh, Charlene, I want you something a little bit more deeper than that. But it's the truth. You know, if you can speak with your partner about your anxieties, about your insecurities, about your worries, and if you've got a supportive partner that can work on this with you, if you feel like you're not alone, if you can feel like your partner finds you amazingly attractive, irrespective of what you're going through, it does something different to you, 100%. So communication is key. Now, we all know that there are some partners that don't like to communicate. So it is about finding how to communicate with your partner. We know that women sometimes can feel quite emotional about something, and then they'll send an essay via text to their partner.
Guilty.
When their partner's at work, right? Might not be the right time. So timing is key. If your partner's just coming from a stressful day at work, maybe not the time to say to them, hey, babe, right, let's talk about this. However, date nights, a great time to talk about some more intimate things. Go for a nice stroll in the park, you know, going to a nice, like a different space, like a cafe, to just have this kind of chat, really important. We cannot get away from the importance of talking about what you're going through, because you need your partners to be a part of this journey with you to help you.
And I guess they may come up with ideas to help as well. Great advice.
Yeah.
But sadly, the lack of sex can drive a wedge between couples, and I've had several heartbreaking comments that I just wanted to share. One listener said that her and her husband are no longer physical. They currently don't share a bed, and she wants to build up to intimacy again, but doesn't know how to start. Another asked, I can't help feeling that my partner just doesn't see me in an attractive sexual way anymore, and it's not a subject we talk about. Another one said, my boyfriend is so caring and supportive, but he hasn't touched me since my reconstruction. When he stays over, he sleeps separately, so not to hurt me or keep me awake when I need to sleep, and I don't know how to broach getting our sex life back. Another listener said, my husband moved to the spare room last February when I began chemo. He hasn't moved back and I miss the physical contact and I'm heartbroken with the distance. How can we start to build up physical intimacy again if our partners are scared to kick things off?
You know, it can be really hard for partners because particularly if they aren't equipped with the information about how to be there for you, you know, sometimes they feel quite scared. And they don't know how to process that or how to communicate that. And so it can be difficult for them too. I think the key is to, and I always sort of go back to like date nights, is to find ways that you can connect again that reminds you both of what you have and what you had. And what I mean by that is to kind of add the playfulness back to your relationship, add the fun back to your relationship. You know, go on a nice day, go to a theater show, you know, go to the cinema, go hand in hand to the park, just so it takes away the fear of what's happening in the space. And I think for a lot of couples that I work with, there's so much pressure within their relationship with finances, with health, with whatever it may be, that they don't allow themselves to kind of like connect and just have fun again. When it comes to sex, when it comes to physical intimacy, there are so many people that see physical intimacy in such a serious way. It's very much like, okay, now we've got to do this because we are in a relationship. We've got to do this. The pressure that's put on that we put on ourselves sometimes to have sex. Sometimes I have to remind my clients, you know, sex is about pleasure. It's like, you know, eating chocolate, you know, or something that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
But you don't have to go straight to that. Like, take it back to just being and spending time with each other and then go from there. But then add the communication into that space too.
I love that. And when you mentioned holding hands, I remember when I was first dating Dermot, we went to a friend's house and we were holding hands. And they said, oh, you'll stop that after 6 months. People who were married don't hold hands. And we still do. And there's just something now, kind of 10 years later, just holding hands and walking. And it just connects you.
Yeah.
Outside of the bedroom, just you remember that you still have that connection.
Can I just add there as well? We said that. So that holding hands is amazing. And we know the effect in terms of that kind of oxytocin kind of effect as well, right? That kind of bonding hormone. But if for those who watch Married at First Sight UK as well, there's an intimacy task that I ask some of the couples to do. And one of them is that kind of intimacy gaze. And what we find with couples is that sometimes they're so busy with life, that they don't sort of stop to mindfully connect with one another. And that activity, that intimacy gaze can be so powerful that for a lot of the couples I worked with, it's brought tears to the eyes of both of them because they haven't sort of taken the time to sit and just look at each other.
So for anyone who's not seen Married at First Sight, can you tell us what the intimacy gaze is?
Yes. So you take some time out with your partner to, you stand in front of them or you sit in front of them and you just look into their eyes. And you can do it for about 2 minutes. So you can set like a little stopwatch or something like that. And the idea is you don't talk, you just look at each other. And what people notice is that they don't usually do that because they're so busy with life. So they then notice what's going on in their body. They realize they feel really connected to their partner, or they can see happiness in their partner's eyes or sadness, something that they maybe haven't seen before. And it's just a moment to stop and to connect. And those little activities can be so powerful to bring about like an intimate connection in your relationship. If you do that holding hands as well, that can just create such a great emotional connection with your partner. And I suppose these activities together with the date nights and, you know, on my website, I've got some great sex quiz cards that, you know, for partners that don't want to talk about sex, they can sort of start with the sex quiz cards, which is a little bit of fun, like, oh, what do you prefer? And you can have a bit of a laugh. And these cards, I mean, my clients always laugh because I designed them. So they're like, is this what you think about, Charlene? Like, you know, because all my ideas are on the card. But, you know, it's just about bringing that playfulness back to a relationship and connecting. You know, that really is the key. So
I love that. Now, a couple of my male listeners wrote in asking for help. When they're any advice when you're trying to understand, you don't want to hurt a partner, what can you do?
I'm going to say stereotypically speaking here, because I know that not all men are like this, I get that.
And not everyone has a male partner.
And not everyone has a male partner, absolutely. But for men who want to know how to help their partners, I would say ask them what they need, be patient, be mindful of the language that you use. Now, some of the men that I work with, so I'm gonna sort of talk about my own sort of professional experience with some of the men I work with. They are doers. They just want to know what they've got to do to kind of get the work done so they can move on. They don't want to be in this emotional space of let's explore, let's talk about. But you do have to be careful sometimes in some relationships, how you say things, what you're saying, the words that you're choosing to use, because it can have an impact on your partner and how they feel about themselves. So most of the time, women are going through cancer, where they have a partner, they want their partner to be reassuring, to be consistent, to make them know that they are desired and that they are loved, that they are accepted. Like, it's those things. So it's understanding what your partner needs in those moments and being there for them. And sometimes they don't need your advice. Sometimes they don't need your feedback. Sometimes they just want you to hold their hand and just to be there with them in that space. And sometimes that's enough.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Where can listeners get more advice or help?
So lots of different sites. So you can, I would say, one thing I saw I didn't say here is getting therapy as well. You know, we know that in America, everyone has a therapist. In the UK, we're not quite there yet, right? But psychosexual therapists in particular are, you know, they're trained in this. They're trained to help you with sexual issues and psychology of it as well. So you can go to sites like COSRAT, so COSRT. I believe it's the College of Sexual Relationship Therapists. I'm so used to saying COSRAT that I don't actually know what it stands for. But yeah, COSRAT. And if you go to my website, so theintimacycoachuk.com, there's lots of resources on there as well. And anything to do like female sexual pleasure, you can go to OMG Yes, which is a really great site. Fernley, F-E-R-L-Y, Fernley.com is really great. And in terms of the menopause, also like the menopause charity and menopausesupport.co.uk with lots of resources on there as well. So there is a lot of information out there. If it all feels super overwhelming and you're not sure where to start, then come and find me on Instagram, Charlene Douglas Official, and I can direct people.
Brilliant. And we'll put all the links in the show notes. Any final tips for anyone listening who's given hope of ever being intimate again?
I suppose, as she said that there, the first thing that came to my mind is to be kind and gentle with yourself. You know, your focus has to be your health. Your focus has to be your well-being. That has to be number one. That goes without saying. Everything else is secondary to that, right? And be kind and gentle to yourself. Take your time to do things that work for you at a pace that works for you. And don't keep it in. You know, share with your loved ones, with your partner, how you're feeling. Allow them to be there for you, to support you.
Wow. Thank you so much. I've learned so much. And I know this is going to be a great help to my listeners. It's been so nice to talk, Charlene.
Thank you. Thanks, Liz.
That was sex and relationship therapist Charlene Douglas, and she had so much great advice there. And I really wish I could have listened to this when I was first diagnosed, as I resonated with all of you when I was going through it with my husband Dermot. The takeaway for me here is that it's all about honest communication with yourself, your partner, and when you're dating. It does take time to learn to love yourself and to let someone love you, but you can be intimate again. And now it's time for the wonderful Donna Ashworth to read us the poem of the week from her best-selling book, Wild Hope.
Happy. They say happiness is a choice, but I think it's like day and night. We cannot be happy all of the time, nor can we be continuously sad. We must let them interchange, like the sun and the moon. That's the cycle, you see. And yet, they can exist together sometimes too, a little strangely, a little awkwardly perhaps, reminding us life is not black and white, that emotions are every colour, and nothing is constant. They say happiness is a choice, but I think it's peace that we can choose. Peace in the acceptance that life is everything, and that that's okay. A base line of peace invites happiness to stay a little longer and let sadness come and go as it must, as it all must.
That was Donna Ashworth reading her poem Happy from her latest book, Wild Hope. Now, if you want to read more of Donna's poems, find out about today's guest, Charlene Douglas, or send me a question to answer on the show, you'll find all the details in the show notes. And you can also sign up to my podcast newsletter for my bonus monthly tips. I've got to say, I've loved reading all your comments about the show. It's been amazing to find out just how much the podcast has helped you. And I'll keep on doing this as long as you need me. Keep the ratings and reviews coming as it helps other people find us. And I can't believe it, but this is the last episode of season two. But don't worry, we're already planning season three and we'll be back again later this year. In the meantime, you can catch up on any episodes you've missed over on YouTube or your podcast app. And you might find the answers to any questions I haven't covered in my breast cancer book. See the show notes for details. And finally, I want to say a huge thank you to you for listening and to everyone who sent me a question or shared a story. I've been inundated and I'm so sorry I didn't have the time to include everybody's question, but I really hope you found some useful information and support throughout the series. Please keep your questions coming for season three. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan and I'll see you next time. So Now I've Got Breast Cancer is produced by Birdline Media.